We'll start this one.
All of a sudden, it got very quiet.
Yeah. But
well,
it's
got entertainment now. Charts and graphs.
That's it.
There you go.
You guys get to share in this whole process with me.
Every week.
Oh, and this is on YouTube.
Yeah, so every Tuesday, muchas gracias. Every Tuesday we meet here at 9:15, and we've been doing this meeting for years. I've got recordings that go back to, I was looking at it the other day, I've got recordings online that go back to 2008.
Wow.
And about 3 years ago, we started streaming it on YouTube at the same time. That's what, I've got a camera right now sitting on top of the monitor over there.
I see it.
And I got another one on this tripod over here. Yeah, this is what...
There we are.
There's,
here,
yeah.
There we are.
There's me. There we are.
And next year, we'll have Feelovision, so that'll be really dangerous.
Bob has volunteered to run around, and every time I say something sensual, he's going to rub you up. Feel around.
Oh.
It's like surround sound. It's feel around.
We walked right into that.
Bob, was that from the Kentucky Fried movie?
Got a Swiss Army knife in my purse.
I do too.
You know that's only effective for the Swiss.
That one I got.
Before we really started, could I make a quick announcement?
Certainly.
Okay, so
that's enough.
It's longer than that. If you decide that you're going to go with another service and you use your Telmex house phone to make international calls for free, like to Canada and the U.S., and you get rid of their internet, that service is no longer free. You pay for your calls, so if you are thinking about that, it's...
Can we talk define that better? Because I'm not understanding what you're saying.
Okay, so my neighbor across the street had Telmex internet package.
Right.
And she got X-Pro, so she canceled her internet.
But kept her Telmex phone.
Jeez.
Yes.
That's what it is, okay.
But she was charged for each and every long-distance
sure.
call
Jeez.
She made to the States.
Yeah, because that's part of the package that they're
exactly.
selling you. They're selling you a digital package that includes
exactly.
internet
so
and all these.
So just be aware if you're thinking that your internet is so bad that you might want to keep the internet and go with somebody else if you make a lot of calls.
You know, and we actually do live in a day and age where you could theoretically use both services if
She's
you decided that's the way to go.
You
could buy a piece of equipment that would balance your loads across both.
She just uses X-Pro. She just got the modem and signed up for the package, and it's cheaper than paying for the long-distance call she makes to the States.
I still haven't had a chance to talk to Juan, but I've invited him to come talk to us, and we just haven't set a date. I want him to come in and tell us, because I know he's done upgrades, and he's doing upgrades.
Right,
and so he can.
I'm still waiting to hear from him about when he's going to be mine.
Yeah, so sometime in the next few weeks, I will set a date with him to come in and talk to us about
so
his...
He just does internet. He doesn't do cell phones.
No.
No.
Scott, we have a new couple at the end of the table.
Oh, we do. Hey, you know what? Since it's time to start, let me just introduce ourselves, and we'll do some introductions real quick and be on with it. Hello, everybody. This is the San Carlos Computer Club. I'm Scott Stimson from International Computer Solutions, and I'm so happy to see so many people join us for our regular meeting. We meet here every Tuesday at 9:15 to 10:15-ish. We never really know when we're going to end. This is an unorganized, agenda-free meeting, and many times it's a coffee time for a lot of us. People try and get here a little early so that they can do breakfast before the meeting and stick around and converse. I like to think of this as a place where you can meet people that are dealing with the same kind of technologies that you're dealing with in your particular situation. This is a unique niche what we are, this community in San Carlos. A lot of English speakers in a Mexican town using Mexican internet, and we all deal with kind of the same unique problems. I don't mean any offense, but we're all of about the same generation. And so there's a lot. That's, I was trying to avoid saying that, but we deal with a lot of the same problems. And so it's good to know that, that there's three people down here that have iPads and they're trying to make them work. It's good to know that Tequila's has really fast internet. They've got a fiber optic connection. So if you're in one of these places that has lousy internet, you know that you can come to a place like this. And people will tell it. Barracuda Bob's has pretty good internet. The Jack Snacks has pretty good internet. And you learn these kinds of things coming to a meeting like this. So these are all our unique experiences. And I like to share a lot of tech news and answer a lot of questions for people that have it. But all this happens in an unorganized form. Nobody that comes here regularly thought I would spiel out all this information just now because I am not agenda-driven. I do bring some of my own topics, and so I always have a list of things that's ready to talk about. But first, I like to hear from you all, and I see new faces. I also see Christine's got something right off the bat. But please reintroduce yourselves. I apologize. You're Josie?
Yes, I'm Josie.
Nice to meet you, Josie. I remember your name because it's my niece's name.
Oh.
And is it Mary?
Mary.
Mary. Nice to meet you, Mary.
I'm a digital immigrant.
Well, what does that mean?
I had to learn technology, but my grandchildren are growing up with it, so they're digital natives.
Oh, okay. That's an interesting.
I learned that at a workshop.
And I see another new face down here.
My name is Tina.
Hi, Tina.
Hey, Tina.
Nice to meet you.
My husband, Charles.
I'm with Charles, or Carlos, if you prefer a more Spanish twist.
Well, it's nice to meet both of you. Thanks for coming to our meeting. I tell people all the time, if you sit down at our table, you're one of our members, so you're welcome. Please feel free to ask any questions. I like dumb questions because they're easier to answer.
And no, he doesn't. He makes fun of people.
I make fun of Ray's questions.
And Bob's questions.
And why are this long introduction? Is this a podcast to share with the crooks around the world or what?
That's right. And this is Bob, if you haven't met Bob recently.
nickname is Michaela Bob.
Michaela Bob?
He always asks about the Michaela.
Oh, the Michaelas, yeah.
Michaelas.
I've done things a little different. I got a cable across the table in one direction. I got a cable behind you guys. Richard wasn't able to join me today, so I'm missing some of my camera equipment as well as another tripod. So we've got a little bit of a different show going on today. So I have come with some things I thought you guys would find interesting, but I see Christine's got something right off the bat. How can we help you, Christine?
Oh, I have a comment and a problem. I don't know if you saw at CES, the Computer Electronics Show.
Oh, yeah.
But they're now selling these two ear pods. You wear one, you speak Spanish. I wear one, I speak English, and it translates.
Wow.
Really?
Has this hit the market yet?
I don't know that.
When I read about it, I got the impression that it was a CES device.
Yeah, but see, I don't have to learn anymore.
That was,
I'll wait for it.
Was definitely going to come to market, but I don't think they're ready to put it on shelves yet. But yeah, what an amazing product.
Incredible.
Wow. You'd be able to stick a device in. Well, we do have the Google Translate app.
No, it's an app that you speak into the phone, can reply the answer in Spanish.
Yeah, it does.
Yeah?
That's the Google app.
You know, on this thought, I'm thinking about how the Apple EarPods, or AirPods, how they have incorporated Siri into these AirPods. And we don't really talk much about that. I mean, these are $200 devices. But what that tells me about a product like this is we see it in an isolated product. Pretty soon they're going to license it to headphone manufacturers so that it'll be a function you just turn on. And everybody that has a headphone that has licensed this stuff will be able to take advantage of it. I can imagine that if you were going to travel to a foreign country, you'd make sure you had those kinds of earphones with you. And if people are dealing with tourists, you would imagine that their bosses or themselves would make sure they had these kinds of earphones available to them.
You have to get the other person to wear it.
Well, and that's kind of the comment I'm making is that like in this town, you could imagine as soon as you're licensing these out to headphones, it's going to be a decision maker when you go to buy headphones. You'd be like, well, I'm going to buy these because they've got the translator built in, and I go to San Carlos 6 months a year. All right? And you're going to be dealing with property managers and service attendants that are like, I'm always working with people in English. I should get a pair of these headsets. Or maybe even OXO will do something like that. OXO's boss will be like, we're distributing these headsets to our workers in San Carlos. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Right? No, a lot of potential for that kind of application.
And so the problem, I have a DNS proxy. I've got a smart, sharp TV that has Wi-Fi built in, and I have Expro. I can watch Netflix and Amazon Prime just using the TV and the Wi-Fi. Everything's fine. I switch to my Roku, and everything's fine except Netflix. It keeps giving me an error message about using a proxy.
So you're using... Tell me again, what did you switch over to?
Expro.
To Expro. So in Expro, you can't.
No, I can on the TV. I just all of a sudden, I was having a problem with the Roku, and Roku said, delete the channel and put it back in. And when I put it back in, it doesn't like the DNS proxy.
Same problem in a way I have. A Roku works very different than other boxes where it seems like you can't configure the DNS stuff in the Roku. And even when you connect...
But it was working.
Work on other devices, but not work through Roku.
Now you have, am I remembering this right? Do you have a Roku TV, or is it
no,
Roku
it's a
box?
No, it's a Roku Ultra box.
Okay, and when, well, how are you doing the switch? You're going into the Roku software and you're changing over to.
Right.
So you've got Expro bringing it in to a Wi-Fi hotspot.
Router, yeah.
And I've worked on your stuff, and I'm sorry, I'm having to think it through right now with you because I'm not remembering it. And then you've got it connected to another router that is configured to be the DNS.
No, actually, that situation is no longer true. There is another router, but it's in another room, and it's not connected by wire.
Okay, so you're using it as an extender.
Only for the bedroom.
But that's what your other device is, and so you only got the router from Expro.
Expro, right.
And so what is it you're switching?
Well, I was trying to watch Netflix on Roku, and what was happening, all of a sudden, I don't know if I pushed a button or what, but all of a sudden the screen did this, and the closed captioning went off the screen. So I asked Roku about it, and they said, well, delete the channel and then put it back on. I did that, and as soon as I put it back on using the Roku, it says you're using a proxy. You can't watch this. But if I switch over to the TV Wi-Fi,
it works just fine.
It works just fine. And I'm afraid to change anything because at least I got that one program that has seven seasons that I'm trying to get through.
Boy, that's really interesting.
Yeah.
And I'm sure, have you tried reactivating? I mean, I'm sure that wouldn't make a difference,
yeah,
but on smart DNS, yeah. But I'm sure that wouldn't make a difference.
I even tried resetting the Roku device.
I sent it to factory.
And the reset, rebuilds everything. But
yeah, I haven't run into this problem. Nobody's reported this to me.
Basically, with some of the VPNs and the DNS stuff, they can detect that you're on it if you're connecting through a Roku, that if you connect through your PC, it works.
Sure, yeah.
And
well,
I mean PC connected to the same router that's running the same VPN.
Have you tried contacting Smart DNS?
No, I haven't tried that.
I think that would be your next step.
Okay.
I mean, if you had me over to solve that problem, I think I would get into their chat and just start chatting with them about this problem. I mean, I can't help but think that it has something to do with Roku has a market in Mexico now. And maybe because you're not on a VPN, you're on the Mexican side of things. Maybe that you downloaded a Netflix version that's intended for Roku in Mexico.
Do you have U.S. enrolled? Are you paying U.S. rates for
yes.
Netflix or Mexico?
Yes.
Well,
U.S. Yeah.
Well, and what you would think would happen is, regardless of whether your Roku's in the United States or in Mexico, you have a Netflix account. And so you should be pulling up the Mexican catalog of Netflix when you're, at the very least.
I've seen just the difference. You know, if I connect my Mexican page, you know, to the U.S.
Yeah.
site, it basically says, uh-uh.
You can't do that.
Can't do that.
Hmm.
But if
and,
I connect
and,
my Mexican site and my Mexican router, then I can get all my U.S. stuff. Still, you know, it's just the same channel and stuff.
You know, we can talk about this, but this is a uniquely new problem, and I think the first ones to talk to is Smart DNS Proxy, because that's their business model, is making it possible for you to use Netflix in another country as though you're in the United States.
And Amazon Prime works fine.
I have a Canadian Netflix on my computer. I don't run it any other way, and when I want to use it, I just buy it, fill it, feed it through the TV from the computer.
Yes, but you're not using a VPN or a proxy, are you? So you're using your Canadian Netflix account to access the Mexican catalog.
Yeah, no, I'm not too sure about that. I get exactly the same content here as at home.
Well, I mean, we could probably do some explorations of that, but that's probably more an indicator of how similar the two catalogs are these days. And a good way to determine that is just go in and see what your ability to use English subtitles are on any content that's not Netflix content. And if it's been licensed from another, like a CBS, or, oh, here's an easy one, is does it have Star Trek Discovery on it?
Cause, I wouldn't have a clue because I've never watched a Star Trek episode in my life.
Well, in the United States, you can't watch that show unless you subscribe to CBS All Access. So you pay an extra subscription fee to another service. But in Mexico, Star Trek Discovery has been licensed to Netflix. So you, if you were in the States and you didn't want to pay CBS All Access, you could hire a VPN to Mexico to watch the programming in the United States, because it's available here, and I've heard that it's available all throughout the world. The CBS All Access is only in the United States, so they've had to cut deals with Netflix providers across the globe to make this show available outside the United States. I don't know if that's the case in Canada or not, but there's a good chance if you can see that programming here, you're on the Mexican catalog. And my first suggestion is probably the better one, is pick something that came from other than Netflix. It's not a Netflix produced. Like it was an HBO show at one point, or it was a Hulu show at one point, one of these things. And then see if it has English subtitles. If it has English subtitles, there's a very good chance you're in the U.S. or you're in Canada. If it doesn't have it, then you're probably using the Mexican catalog. And the reason I say not Netflix produced, because Netflix produced programs are allowed everywhere on the Netflix network, no matter what country you're in. And undoubtedly, it'll come with English subtitles, because why not? They can produce it with all that and distribute it everywhere. Yeah, I would talk to Smart DNS Proxy. They would... if there was a trick to it, they would have it. If you can't do it, they would know it. Or at least that's what they're supposed to do, because that's what they're selling you. And then bring that answer back to us, okay, so we know what's going on.
That's all I got.
Well, I think, you know, also ask specifically about the Roku, because I'm starting to think that the Fire Stick, which can do DNS stuff, tends to work different than Roku's.
Well, you know, this is interesting, because one of my topics today is about the new Fire Stick 4K that I got over the Black Friday special.
Oh, I have that.
I've been playing with that 4 stick, and if you guys are interested in hearing about this, it's got awesome performance. It's a great device. I mean, just right off...
$25.
Yeah. I mean, in fact, I got it with a smart speaker for $49, so I paid less than half the price of those two devices for both of them. I was really impressed by the deal. The performance is amazing. When you use the remote control, there is no waiting. There's no hesitation. It feels really good to use. I'm very happy with it. And I've been able to use here in Mexico with Mexican internet, I've been able to use Netflix, YouTube, Kodi, Streamio. I've also been able to use Amazon Music on it without any issues. And I also put a note here that I'm sure Amazon Photos works, but I haven't gotten into that. Apparently, Amazon Photos has this whole thing that's very similar to Google Photos, and
you can
use that as your slideshow on your TV set.
Yeah, I've done that.
But unlike Google Photos, and we were going to talk about this a bit with Bob's Chromecast, unlike Google Photos, you typically don't have a backup of photos in Amazon services. So you have to go through some extra hoops to get photos on your Amazon stick, because it's just not something you're typically doing. You don't normally take photos on your phone and have backups going to. You have to install the Amazon app, and you have to set it up for photos. And so I haven't gotten into that myself, but right off the bat, there's a little bit of friction. If you're looking for that feature, the Google Chrome is much more ready to go for most people, because a lot of people are using Google Photos as their photo backup. And I discovered that's a very simple thing to do, the slideshow using the Google Chrome device. Besides the performance, one of the other things that I thought was really cool about it is it supports CC, this consumer electronic component connection. What that means to normal people is you plug in the Fire Stick, and during the interview, you're with the remote and it's having you set up things. It identifies your TV if your TV's compliant. These new devices have a power button and volume controls like up, down, and mute. And those are all available on your Fire Stick for your TV. If you think about this is pretty neat. Collection of standards coming together. If the TV's compliant with CEC, it tells the Fire Stick what kind of TV it is. The Fire Stick, because it's an internet device, can go out on the internet and look up the correct codes for that particular model. So it doesn't matter what TV, it doesn't matter if it's gotten the latest update. It can rely on databases out there on the internet that are getting updated all the time. So the latest TV to the oldest TV, if it's CEC compliant, the Fire Stick can automatically figure out how volume and power works.
Roku did that too.
Absolutely. The Roku does this as well. You're right, Christine. I didn't mean to cut you off there. What's unique about this is their older devices don't do this, and this is part of the new 4K devices, the new remote control. So I was really impressed with that. I thought that was really cool. Well, one of the disadvantages I found in that same light, I got to use this with a projector for the kids outside. We were doing movies. Well, it didn't recognize the projector. The projector isn't CEC compliant. I used a Bluetooth speaker, which was connected to the Fire Stick. And so all the sound was going through a Bluetooth speaker, but I had absolutely no control over the volume on the remote control. Because I used a Bluetooth for my sound, these were dead buttons on the remote control, and I had to use whatever sound controls I had for the Bluetooth speaker. In this case, there was a knob on the Bluetooth speaker I had to reach over and turn up and down. Look, you're going to feel my pain when you've got that remote in hand and you're like, which remote is it? And it's not any of these remotes. You got to walk up to the speaker and turn it on and off. In defense of this stupid idea of Amazon's not to support Bluetooth speakers, you could get an Amazon smart speaker as your Bluetooth speaker, and then that you could just talk to. You could say, volume up, volume down. So I'm sure they had that in mind when they bundled it together with my smart speaker.
There are a few of us here who used to get up and change the channel.
Yes. On the TV. I did that on Saturday morning.
Oh, my God. With the knob? You turn
all
the knob?
Five channels of cartoons.
Did you have to read something to figure it out?
Yes. Yeah. There was a number.
He Googled it.
It was lit up. And it would go thunk, 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 thunk. My father, however, had a remote. He'd go change the channel.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But, we got our TV in 1952, the first one. And my father didn't like the sound of the commercials. So he got 20 feet of two-wire cord, took the back off the TV, broke into the speaker circuitry, and installed a push-button switch.
Oh, yeah.
And it went across the living room to his chair, and he would turn the sound on and off with that switch.
His mute button.
Yeah, mute button. It's
mute button.
And some of the first remotes were auditory, and if you had a dog with a chain like that, when we go through the room, it would change your channels.
Yeah, those sound remotes. I remember using one of those at my grandma's house. So I have told you most of the things that I've liked about this device. Here is the rub, the thing that I find just insulting, and it's got to be embarrassing or it's strategic. It's got to be one or the other. It's Amazon has not caught up, or this is exactly what they have in mind. Because this device won't play Amazon content. I'm in Mexico, and every time I try and bring up Amazon content, it tells me I'm region locked to the United States.
It knows where you are.
Well, it knows that I'm not where I'm supposed to be. Yeah. It's a subtle difference, but yeah, it knows that I'm not where I'm. I can load software to bootleg programs. I mentioned I can load Kodi. Kodi works great in it. Streamio works great. It's actually one of the best Kodi players that I've played with so far. And Streamio works really well out of it. And Netflix, their competition for this kind of content, works great. I get all the Mexican content. But I am not able to do Amazon Prime. I pay for Amazon Prime in Mexico. I'm not able to do Mexican content across it. I have an Amazon Prime U.S. account, and you are allowed a handful of abroad. You're allowed to watch abroad content. Not available. All of it is not playing on this device because it's region locked. There is no remove the region lock hack out there. There is some hacks for changing the entire operating system, which I imagine will result in the same behavior. And right now I've gotten myself on a quest to get Prime working, because some of the earlier generations or earlier versions of the software allowed people to install an alternate version of the Amazon Prime app. So you'd have the one that comes with the Fire Stick, and you would never use that one. You would install another one that was meant for an Android TV, and that would work, but it wouldn't give you 4K content.
I've been able to watch Amazon Prime here, but I have to disable the VPN to do it.
For Mexican Prime. Are you sure you're not turning on the VPN? Because the VPN would fix this problem.
No, it comes up and says, we see that you are on a VPN. You cannot watch this with a VPN enabled.
And this is the Fire Stick 4K.
Yep, I brought it with me.
And the content, your Amazon account is from the United States?
Yeah, I set it all up in my house in Colorado, and then I brought the stick with me.
Now, wait a second. Because mine was set up when it got here, it didn't matter. And then I reset it up and got down here, and it didn't matter. But yeah. That's interesting that it would be set up in...
But I went to the VPN, and I clicked that I was in Mexico, and I was able to watch.
Which VPN are you using?
Nord
VPN. Is that installed on the stick, or do you have a router that's installed on the stick? It's installed on the stick. That's interesting. So that may be it being set in Mexico is interesting. Maybe something about that blocks it from being seen as having a region.
Yeah, I don't know. I just knew I played around with it, and then I was able to get it.
I'm gonna make a note of this.
Have you tried setting the DNS on the Fire Stick?
Okay, so I'm not using smart DNS. You mean changing the DNS address?
That's in the Fire Stick.
To something like 1.1.1 or something like that? I haven't tried that, no. I mean, the one thing I did try and do is I tried to change it. It shows me my location by zip code. Uniquely Fire Stick software, right? and it shows me with my Alaskan address, and I try and change it to my Mexican zip code, and it won't. It doesn't even recognize it as a viable zip code. Instead of saying this is not within our region, or giving you any, it's more like Sonora or Guaymas doesn't exist. San Carlos doesn't exist as far as this Fire Stick is concerned. It's well, it's like I have typed in a bad number. That's what it's like.
That's because the area code here is the same as Tucson.
Well, I'm talking about the zip code. The zip code, the 85506, it's not a U.S.
I had an address in Tucson that had 85507 as the zip code.
Yeah. Yeah, very close, but absolutely does not exist as a U.S. zip code. But as far as the Fire Stick's concerned, you've typed the wrong number in. It doesn't even act as though this is a legitimate zip code. That's not supported. It just treats you like you made a typo, and that's as far as I've gone with that. But I'll try changing DNSs and see what that does.
It just appears like there's more things detecting location these days, and I have a little chart of five different VPNs and how they work and what they will detect or not between your PC. If you connect to a PC or connect to a router, and it's different.
Yeah.
ExpressVPN even said, hey, we're going to cancel because we can't supply you the local Denver coverage you want. We route you to the wrong location. But we'll keep your subscription active for you to continue testing as long as you want because we can't sell it.
I suspect that smart DNS people would do the same kind of thing, too, when you're working out a problem with them because they want to get it solved because that's what they're selling.
And I think it's part of the, it's in the Roku device in my case. And that's why I think
yeah.
But it's interesting, yours is Amazon and mine's Netflix.
Well, what's embarrassing is it's Amazon's device. I got on the horn with Amazon. I spent a couple hours going round and round with their tech support. And I had a very interesting experience because they were really trying to help me solve it. They said that the device is telling it that it's supposed to only work in the United States and they don't have any way to change that. I suspect from all the marketing information, there is a stick available for purchase in Mexico. And I bet that's the only one that's allowed. And I found literature both on Amazon and on the internet in general discussion forums. They refer to it as the international stick. But what I find disconcerting is that in the United States, if you're going to go buy a device, many of us would buy the best device we could for the best price. And that 4K stick is future proof. That's... So what Amazon's trying to sell you is this concept of take your Fire account with you, take your Amazon account with you and watch this content. Well, who wouldn't think I'll grab my stick, take it with me to my vacation in Canada, England, Mexico, plug it in, get connected, and watch my shows. And you get here with a 4K stick, and it's like, nope, sorry, you can't use this for anything. You can bootleg as much as you want, but you can't use your legitimate content. Or you can use the competition.
Is there a difference between an HD stick and a 4K stick?
Well, 4K content's available. And I suspect that either this is a stumbling, which we've watched Amazon stumbles all the time with their technology. They are the classic example. They are the new Microsoft. They practice the same way Microsoft used to. They push things out ahead of time before it's ready to go. And they just wait for the debris, the fallout of problems, and they fix them as they go. They're really more interested in market share than anything else. We will watch them give these products away. As soon as Roku is a genuine competitor to this space, I don't think they consider themselves a competitor in this space for real. I think they have so much money that they can just throw this stuff around, and they're just getting more shares and more shares, and at some point they're going to monetize on them. But they can just give these products away. They can give them away at a loss. Every time Google comes out with a smart product that looks like it'll control your lights and locks better, Amazon can just start giving away locks and lights for free. That's they have that kind of financial clout right now. So I can't tell whether this is a stumbling or if this is strategic. Because strategic, it makes sense as well. If they don't have servers in this country ready to provide 4K content, and they don't, and they know the majority of connections in this country can't support 4K content, then strategically they can, they're not selling 4K devices. Then they don't have to catch the fallout of it not working in this country. So, anyway, I guess what that all comes down to is I love the device if you're in the United States. It's here, it's a little sketchy.
This is the Fire Stick.
This is the Fire Stick 4K. Yeah. And it is so much better than the original. That international one has a hesitation in it when it loads, just the action on the buttons, you're click a button and wait, click a button and wait, start an app and wait. There's this, all this wait, maybe frozen, should I reboot it? I mean, your mind goes through all these. I've dealt with a lot of them. And what happens is you learn the device. You learn the hesitation. You learn this hurry up and wait kind of mentality when you're using the device. And you get used to it and you become accustomed to it. But with this 4K, it's just right there. You hit a button and it goes. It is such a great performance of equipment. And I've been messing around with it hardcore for the last week and a half. I finally had time to sit down and be messing around with it. And who knows, by the end of my experience, maybe I will be like, bring me your 4K and we're going to load a different operating system on it, because these would be great devices down here if it just didn't have this blocking on it. I also know that the Smart DNS would solve this problem. If I just enlisted the Smart DNS proxy service, I would have access not only to Amazon abroad content, but the U.S. content without any problems.
Scott, most of us here are retired. We're in a hurry.
Yeah. You don't mind waiting. Well, I appreciate Mary's experience. I know you're using a Fire Stick. Are you using any Amazon content across it?
Yeah.
Yeah? And is this the abroad? Because it has a listing there that says Amazon abroad.
No, it doesn't say abroad.
It doesn't say abroad?
But don't you have to test both Fire Sticks, the international and the U.S. one?
Yeah, well, that's what I'm fairly certain that the standard stick, the one that's HD, it's not 4K, is the international. I think that's what they use as the language.
That's what I got.
Yeah. And so the international stick, I would expect it to give you access to the U.S. abroad category, or if you pay for Mexican. Do you pay for Mexican Prime?
No.
So I would expect that content to be available on that stick as well if you're paying for Mexican Prime.
So has anybody here run into that Hugo who sells Fire Sticks here in town? Do you know?
Hugo?
Yeah, he sells at the market. Yeah. The Briscotti market.
He was over at a place where I was, and I was showing people how it works. And he's readapted the stick somehow. Jill broke it or whatever, you know, so that it's loaded with all kinds of stuff.
Yeah, well, and that's my point with this. You don't have to jailbreak this. You can load it full of all these programs that we use for watching TV shows and services and stuff. That's not the issue. The issue is Amazon content with the 4K stick specifically. But
I just wonder if anybody knows which one he's selling. I didn't ask him. So.
Is this the fellow that is at the Saturday market?
I haven't seen him there.
Yes. I was told if you buy one, buy a 4K, not an HD.
Yeah, from him? No.
From anybody.
Oh, yeah. But he didn't say that to you.
Which stick? Let's find out. Let's find this Hugo guy and find out which stick he's selling. Because, I mean, there's some real advantage to being able to do that. Now, I have to say, if you are interested in using Scott Bailey's service, that Radiosity for watching TV, well, he's got sticks as well. And so that's another route to get a Fire Stick. And I haven't checked with him. I'll ask him which sticks he's selling too.
He's the guy that told me that I should get a 4K.
Did he have 4Ks?
He He gets them, he said, about six at a time from people who bring stuff back for him.
Okay.
That's usually all he has, so that it doesn't take longer than to disappear.
Okay, so Scott's selling the 4K. The 4K, are you, not only are you future-proofed when there's finally 4K content, but the performance of them is just crazy. It's like night and day compared to one of the standard sticks. If you've been using a Fire stick from before, you'll just be blown away by how well this 4K stick works. Works better than my Android TV. I'm ready to replace it. I've got it loaded up with all the things my PC uses in my entertainment center. I'm just about ready to just plug it into my and turn off the PC because it's handling everything except Amazon Prime. Well, if I can move on, is there things I'm missing? Are there questions? I don't see any hands going up, so I'm just going to keep talking if you guys don't mind
did you
listening.
Find the address of that person you were looking for? The guy that sells the fire sticks?
Hugo.
Hugo is the name. I haven't looked for it.
Can you put an address out on the email so you have
it? It's on Viva.
Oh, it's on Viva?
I think. Yeah.
I have a question, sir.
Yeah, certainly.
It is kind of off the wall, kind of different from what we've been talking about. I'm an old public health man. I've been hearing a lot about this 5G that they're going to. And I hear conflicting things. Some people say, man, this can cause some real problems. Other people say, don't worry about it. Me, I kind of worry about it because I know how the government covers up things. That's just me. And, it seems like, especially with the younger people, there's this giant rush to technology. And I'm not commending or condemning. 5G may be the greatest thing since sliced bread, but I just want somebody who's somewhat expert on this, I think. What is your take? Do you think nothing to worry about, or there may be some real potential health problems? I mean, this is just going to be everywhere, so people can't say, I'm not going to be affected by it, because, you are, if it is indeed something that can cause some kind of health issues.
Well, we've talked about 5G quite a bit in this group, and I'll repeat what I've reiterated in the past about what I know about 5G, and that it's all based on a frequency range that is called non-ionizing radiation. And every study that they've done on this type of radiation so far has shown less of a threat. And it does not show.
It's not as much of a threat. Okay.
Well, I mean, we can't say there's no study.
You want four rounds in the chamber, you just want three.
Yeah, I mean, like the threat that you have from non-ionizing radiation has been heat.
A microwave.
Like the microwave. That's right.
From the inside out.
Yeah. So you're not considering. I mean, it's the same threat you have from fire. Or from your stove, right? Or from boiling water. It's that kind of threat. It's superficial tissue damage that you're worried about. Say again?
It's not a radiation.
Well, it's not fair to say it's not, because it's absolutely a radiation. All our radio waves are radiation. But, well, it's not heat that it radiates. What it does is it excites molecules, and those molecules move, and the movement creates the heat. That's why there are certain things you can put into a microwave and they won't heat up. You can actually go buy, that's what a microwave safe dish is. It cannot heat up. It doesn't have the right kind of molecules to be excited and create heat. But the food does. The food has water molecules in it. And so these kinds, I don't mean to digress into this stuff, but I'm kind of a nerd about a lot of things.
No.
So my takeaway is you're not overly concerned about it.
Well, at this point, I think we should always be studying these things, but I'm receptive to the idea that every time they study it, they see less of a risk from it. I think there is something to be said about having waves up here all the time. I wear Wi-Fi headphones. I wear Bluetooth headphones all the time. I've got Wi-Fi radiating around me. I definitely want it studied. But the radiation that we traditionally have come to be concerned about is the kind of radiation that makes other things radioactive. And that's breaking the molecular bonds of atoms. And when you do that, it's so devastating because when you bring something that's had that happen to it against something else, then that something else is starting to have its molecular bonds broken down. And it's that kind of that ionizing radiation. It's that kind of stuff that alters DNA and alters RNA and causes mutations and causes cancers and people die from. And so traditionally, those are the radiations that we're concerned about. And this non-ionizing radiation has never caused us a problem. There's plenty of non-ionizing radiation examples across the world that are found in nature that we just deal with. But 5G has brought this discussion up again because of the amount of congestion that it's going to cause of this kind of radiation. That we're going to... we saw a number last week. We were talking about if you looked out on the horizon and saw a cell phone tower, if it was going to be 5G, you would see four more towers for you to be able to take advantage of those speeds. They're also talking about gigabit speeds with 5G. That's going to take us from the gigahertz into the – well, it's all gigahertz. I'm sorry. Into millimeter wave size. And for that to be functional – those devices have to be much closer to us. And I've used the example before that like a skyscraper used to face a cell tower. Now you're probably going to have antennas on the corners, maybe like every 10 stories to take advantage of those kinds of speeds. So that's a lot of congestion that's going to be around us. But so far there's nothing that really shows a legitimate health concern.
What was that item you put on
the... I'm sorry, I giggle. I say, except for our own hubris is what I come back to. Is somebody like me going, don't worry, it's going to be fine. And, oh, well, maybe it's not after we've got...
He compared it to sliced bread, which used to be good for us, but it isn't anymore.
That's a good point.
What was that item you put on there about some gadget that's being sold with built-in malware?
Oh, you see that up here?
I saw it somewhere on Facebook.
Yeah, I mean, I suggested it as one of our topics. Do you think we've covered that pretty well?
The
5G.
I know it's still kind of up in the air, and you can't give a definitive answer to everything. But
well, and I want to see if you guys run across articles about 5G, health related articles. I mean, first, please, let's use credited sources. I mean, things that I'm going to respect Mayo Clinic before I'm going to respect Mother Jones, even though I read Mother Jones. I want to see some accredited things tell us, because when you go to the accredited things, all you see is that they've done another study, and it's not quite as damaging as they were thinking it could be. But I'm interested in all that, so please forward it to me. I want to form an incited opinion.
If I could tell you how I had personal experience with some of it. I used to work in industrial hygiene at the Boeing Company. They did a lot with chemical exposure, and we had standards that you go by. And I remember one thing was a chromium exposure, because Boeing sprayed a lot of chromium paints. And there was a standard for it. Let's say it's 100 micrograms. So you go out and do an air test, and we said, it's 80 micrograms, so you guys are fine. You're below the standard.
Yeah.
Then guess what? 2 or 3 years later, research comes out. They change it to 50 micrograms. Now I have to go back to tell this gentleman, you have been overexposed. I told you 80 micrograms was okay. Now we're down to 50. So all those years that you were at 50, or 80 and I told you that was okay, now we're at 50. Now you're overexposed. Now we got to put you in masks. Now we got to put all kind of ventilation in.
Yeah, that's right.
Now, how do I tell that guy? And he asked me, now am I going to have some effects from this? Because I've been exposed to 30 micrograms more than what you're telling me now.
Yeah.
How do you reconcile that with somebody? That's what I'm concerned.
Why?
Yeah. Well, that's what Boeing told us, and I was
doing it. I was going to say, you're not going to get anything but wise-ass remarks from this group. Those aren't the kind of questions we answer seriously.
That's why I bring that up, because you hear this research, and it comes out. You know, eggs are a classic example, too. Eggs are fine. Eat all the eggs you want. No, can't eat any eggs. Oh, the eggs are fine. No, they're not. Yes, they are. Finally, I just said, I don't care what you people say. I'm going to eat a reasonable amount of eggs, and if I get heart disease, well, sorry about that. I mean, I'm just tired of going back with all these experts to say one thing one day and something another day. I mean, I'm sorry to get on the soapbox. That just galls me up one side and down the other.
Well, on that note as well, I was saying about credited sources. I would never look at tobacco research from a tobacco company. I would never look at 5G research from a wireless carrier. I would,
or from a flat earther.
Right. Yeah. To begin with, I wouldn't be on that YouTube channel.
Oh, it's exciting. It's really good.
Well, what Gary was bringing up was a topic I proposed on Facebook that was a real callback for me, because I remember this happening in the Obama administration, where they started subsidizing smartphones for low-income people so that they would... the idea was to bring them up to a level where they can get a job, they can find job interviews, they can so maybe they don't have a steady place to live, but they've got a steady phone number to answer to, and they had access to the internet. Well, it turns out, and this was discovered in December, that these phones that qualified for this program have malware in them. Is it back in, these are phones from 2018. I think they're still, these are still available through a government subsidy. But they've discovered that these phones were distributed with malware in it. And they've got, I don't know if you guys remember my experience with a Blue phone that I ended up with all this research on, how Blue was distributing a number of phones on Amazon that had malware in it. Well, not malware, but a Trojan in it. They had used a piece of software called Wireless Update that the distributor of the software, not the manufacturer of the phone, had a tie-in and was able to push out updates through the Wireless Update application. And it was part of the operating system and could not be removed. And that's what they've discovered is also in this phone. So there's a malware that comes, and then there's this piece of software used for updates that is in third-party control. So the manufacturer can't control what happens across that piece of software. I bring it up because I thought everybody would appreciate the shock and gasp of the government-sponsored phone having malware in it. I don't see any solution to it. The experts out there, I did a little bit of research, and there are some developers of Android software that do this kind of thing. There is a generic Android operating system that you can flash your phone and put this on. I did not see anything where this has been going on for a long time. I didn't see anything about it as being a cure for this, at the very least, the Wireless Update program, because what I learned from the Blue experience is they were never able to get that out of the operating system, even when they were able to change it to a completely different operating system. For the phone to work, for it to identify its hardware, it had to have that shim in it. And so no matter what iteration they put on these phones, that shim of compromise was always part of it. And consequently, that whole line of Blue phones is not used for anything anymore, because we're all so aware of it. They can't be sold on Amazon anymore because everybody's aware of it. Developers, hackers are not interested in using those phones because they're not able to pull that shim out of it. And what I read in this article was that if you try and pull this out of this government-sponsored phone, it'll brick the phone. The phone will just stop working as a phone. So there's a whole slew of people out there using these government-subsidized phones that are at great risk of security compromise. They're at immediate risk because it is malware that is installing apps on their phone and shooting advertisements up at them that is not under their control. And they're at a subtle risk of, at any moment, some third party could get a hold of that shim, and then they could load whatever they want into your phone.
Is there any indicator by the user?
What's that?
Is there any indication for the user that is happening?
Only apps appearing without their permission. That's the only real indicator. Advertisements coming on the phone without your permission. Like, you never authorized something to bring advertisements up. or just on your home screen, apps just appearing. And that's how the blue phones were, the blue phone I got. And you said you get what you pay for. I was buying a flagship phone that was infected with this stuff. And there is a whole slew of Chinese phones back in 2016 to 2018 that were getting sold with these kinds of compromises in them. And a majority of them, you could not blame the manufacturer. The best you could blame the manufacturer for was being competitive in a very competitive market, because they were bringing you a phone that was so cheap, they were not in charge of the operating system.
Let's change that. You don't get something for free.
Yeah. Well, these weren't free either. These were subsidized. But you can get... Yeah, you can get these problems. My point was, you can get these problems with some of the most expensive phones out there. In Blue's case, they weren't in charge of their operating system. They had to outsource it to a third party to be competitive, and it was the third party that was doing this. You had a question back there? No, nothing to add.
I have a question about computer glasses.
Let me finish. I'll put a link to these on the website if you're interested. Because so many of us use Malwarebytes, this is a Malwarebytes issue. Malwarebytes is the ones that discovered this going on. Malwarebytes has approached the company. They've been trying to get comments from them. They won't tell them. And the phone is built for Virgin Mobile, which is owned by Sprint. And so Malwarebytes has also approached Sprint about it. And Sprint's official position is, we don't see these as malware problems. Which is very suspicious of a company that has done licensing agreements that, like, we're going to use these tools to make sure these apps are always getting on these phones. And it's also very suspicious of, we will subsidize a phone with the government, and the government decides that these tools are okay on these phones. So I suspect this is going to become a bigger issue. And now that we're aware of it, I've got a feeling this is going to blow up. This is going to be a Sprint U.S. issue. That we're going to find out that this, behind closed doors, this is the way this has gone down. Kind of very, very similar to what they're trying to get Apple to do with the encryption key. To open up your phones when they want to. It's going to blow up in that kind of issue. And now I'm done. Again.
No, I was just curious. I'm in the market for a computer glasses, you know, that have a magnification in them. But then you go out online and they have all these different coatings, you know, blue coatings and so forth. Which is the best kind of computer glasses to get?
Yeah, I'm definitely not an expert in that, but I did go to that free optical test that they had over the weekend with Mary at the coffee shop there. We bought new glasses for my kids, and we found out one of my kids, she was complaining about extra blurry vision, and we found that her prescription had worsened, and so she's in line to get some new glasses. And I got myself checked out because for the last 3 years, I've had to use reading glasses, and
it's called getting older.
This is why I make fun of Ray's questions.
Well, you got my glasses. Well, oh, presbyopia.
Well, and it has felt like it's gotten worse. It's called getting older. Thank you, Ray. And so I wanted to do that thing where it's nothing serious. It's not diabetes. It's just verify that these are all normal things. Yeah. And that's what they did for me. And they were selling a blue light protection. My kids had that on their glasses before, from what I understand. If you go into the optometrist, they're selling this stuff, and so they've got a blue light protection lens and one without it, and you can see how the blue light passes through one. And they had that there at Mary, so you could see how what they were selling would block the blue light. The blue light is all about the what do they call it? Your circadian rhythms. Another thing I probably shouldn't know too much about, but. Circadian? Thank you. See, I don't know a lot about it. Yeah. So your circadian rhythms, it has to do with when your body thinks that it's getting dark and when you can go to sleep. And so that might be a real concern for you, or you might be somebody where none of that affects your body clock. I know from my personal experience, I grew up in Alaska. My body clock's all over the board. Mm-hmm. You know, it absolutely does not matter when the sun goes down for me. I'll go to sleep when I'm tired. I'll wake up when I'm not. I do get a kick out of the screen adjustments. I do have it on my phone, to the eye protection, to go to yellow when it reaches a certain time. But for me, it's more like that's your alarm that you've been on your phone too long. It's time to say goodnight. And I let my laptop do it as well, but I seldom see it on my laptop because I've already made that decision with the laptop earlier on in the day. I'm done with it. So I don't have a recommendation, but what I did learn that I didn't know from that experience was that you should pick reading glasses that will allow you to use your screen as well. And I didn't
have to be progressive then.
I don't know.
Just change glasses. Well, that's what I'm planning to do, because I just got these glasses, and these glasses were kind of amazing because they, you know, had all the bells and whistles on it, all the coatings and everything. And if I don't wear them, the people at the other end of the table look blurry.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm only using them for reading. They're really only bifocals for reading. But because of the coatings that they put on them, everything else clears out.
Well, that's interesting.
I thought it was.
I hadn't heard that before.
I'm so happy with these. But unfortunately, the computer...
So your prescription hasn't changed, but you're thinking that the clarity... Are you sure it's just not scratches that were causing the blurriness? It's the reason why one daughter's getting new glasses. Everything's blurry because her glasses are in such bad shape.
Glasses, everybody looks blurry. When I put them on, everything clears up.
Sure.
Yeah.
Well, you could do the opposite.
But there's nothing in the glass other than the coatings.
So you don't have bifocals.
I do have bifocals.
But it's just glass. You don't have a prescription.
Pass them down.
Well, I'm just trying to.
It's for $250 for reading, but I only need $150 to use my
Apple.
See
the bottom.
Yeah.
I got you.
That's not you.
So there's no prescription.
No prescription in the top.
Okay.
But it clears things up.
So
interesting.
You try it and see if you can see better at a distance.
I know it makes no difference. In fact, it's harder for me to see at a distance with them on. There's something. Because it feels like there's something in front of my distance. But my distance has never been a problem. This glasses thing is new to me. It really is. When I turned 47, all of a sudden I was squinting at the book. I was like, what's up with that?
Plus or minus 2 years of 45 determines if you will need bifocals.
Yeah.
It's very rigid. And like what I have is I can't see the E on the chart. I have horrible vision. But vision is all mental. So I have one contact that's out here and one contact that's close, and I can't tell it. You know, I can read a distance very well. I have 20/20 up close. You know, but because the mind basically determines and figures out what you want to use. It's very interesting if you get into the psychology.
Well, what I can add from my experience was I've been using reading glasses at 1.5. She said, and she gave me something to read, and I could read it just fine, and it wasn't as fine without it. And then she had me hold it out where my computer monitor would be, and I never use reading glasses for my computer monitor. And I'm like, no, it's fuzzy, and I'm like, yeah, it's fine. And what I'll do is I'll get a little closer. I'll never use glasses for my computer monitor. And she's like, you should be using reading glasses for your computer monitor, and you should get a stronger prescription. Or not a prescription. Well, I mean, like, they're reading glasses. So I can go to Costco, and I can buy a stronger. And so she tested me at different, and it was 1.75 that we found would work for my computer monitor and for reading books. And so that's what I'm going to move to. That's my insight on this. I didn't know any of that. I didn't know I should be using.
I get my prescription at 18 inches for the dashboard in my car and my computer because I don't read books.
He doesn't hold a book.
I don't hold a book at 12 inches.
This is becoming an honest meeting. I'm Paul, and I don't read books.
Scott, you're going to lose your things.
Oh, My headsets are falling off.
I just had cataract surgery, and it's an amazing difference. And the one thing, biggest difference is whatever is blue has got a lot bluer.
Oh, wow.
The whites.
Like the propane.
I saw a big difference in the whites.
Saturation. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. How was it? Tough surgery or pretty easy?
No, it's 5 minutes. And
who's
it's
this person you're talking about?
I think I'm going
to next learned this about?
Years.
Where I got this knowledge?
You said Mary?
Oh, the coffee shop's name is Mary. Mary, and they held this free optometrist. I mean, I found out they're based, I think, in Guaymas Norte. So none of this market would have ever found this shop without help. And so what they did is they hosted this.
You know where the big rock is?
They hosted this what do you call it? A optometrist party or something?
Yeah.
they basically allowed anyone to come and get free eye exams and order glasses if they needed them. My wife told me about it. I guess it was posted on Facebook.
Because I didn't see it on my
TV. Or the ice cream.
Yeah, we were glad we went and did it. I mean, I begrudgingly went and did it, but we got really good information from it.
Is Mary going to have another one of these?
It's a little.
Yeah, I have no idea.
Long time.
Yeah. If I hear about it again, I'll post it out. Hey, here's.
I have a question.
Yes, Bob, do you want us to get to your Chromecast?
I would like to.
Okay. Is that the question?
If anybody else is interested, I don't know. If not, I can wait.
Well, I did my homework for Bob. Thanks to Maggie, who's not here today with us. She turned me on to a Chromecast around Christmas time. She wasn't using it and asked if I would like it. And it's the first Chromecast I had in my life, and so I put some real effort into learning how it works. And Bob was interested in using his Chromecast for displaying photos, like photo albums, on his TV. And I didn't have any specific instructions because I'd never done that before. So over the week, I went ahead and got the Chromecast set up. And I have answers for you, Bob. First of all, you need to have photos in Google Photos in an album because you'll have to select an album with the Chromecast to be able to put them on the...
So there's no app?
There is an app. You have to use the Google Home app.
Okay.
The Google Home app, which you can download for free from any iOS or Android... does everything now. It's the application you use for your Google Smart Speaker.
Yeah.
You use it for your Google cameras, your Google Wi-Fi. It all falls under this Google Home app and these Chromecasts. And so you'll use this Home app to set up the Chromecast when you plug it into your TV set. In the Home app, you'll see your Chromecast listed by the name of whatever you gave it when you set it up. And you click on that to find out what's happening on it. So when you go to the Google Chrome app, you open it up, what it does is it shows you who you are and what you have access to.
You need that.
I'm bringing up an example for myself so that I know what I'm talking about. So it tells you the group that you are, who you are and what you have access to. And in my case, it shows my TV is listed here as one of the groups. And it's not available to me because I'm not in my home network right now. But what it would do is it would show me what's on the TV at the moment. And when you first set up the Chromecast, what's on the TV is Google selected imagery, just to be pretty. I have shots from around the world, things of that nature. But you have, let's see, my next, associated account, choose the Chromecast. When you click on, or when you tap on your TV set, or you choose settings, what you'll go into is ambient mode settings.
Do you need a smart TV?
No.
No.
You don't. In fact, this Chromecast is bringing smarts to the TV.
Okay.
So you go into what's called ambient settings. And in there, you can choose from Google selected imagery, your photo galleries, or some experimental thing that it's doing. I didn't pay any attention to the other two very much. I just went into Google Photos. When you go into Google Photos, that's when you choose the album that you're going to have. I have talked longer than it would take for you to do this stuff. It is just very quick and straightforward.
What was the second option you said? Google photo album, and then the other one was
Google selected artworks, and so
no,
there.
The other one,
ambient.
Ambient is what you're in. Ambient
no,
mode is what you're in. The third
modes.
One is it's called experimental.
Oh.
And
so it was your photo something.
No, the first one is my photos.
Okay, so what if you go to my photos?
That's what I'm saying. Is for Bob's situation, he would select my photos, and then it would bring you to a page where you need to select an album.
Oh, okay. I missed that step right here.
And so that album can be one that you previously created, like you have a very specific agenda of photos that you want to have put up. What I did for mine, and you can do this from the app, is you can choose from faces. One option is select family and friends. And when you go into that, what you see is your collection of all the faces that Google's AI, thank you. Yeah, their artificial intelligence that goes and identifies faces in your pictures. Google Photos does this periodically, and it groups your photos together. I haven't had to do anything. I just use Google Photos, and I can click on my daughter's face, and I can see all the pictures my daughter's in. Or my wife's face, and I can see all the pictures that my wife's in. And so I selected family and friends, and it gives me the list of faces. And then I was able to pick my wife's face, my daughter's faces, my mother-in-law's face, my parents' faces. And I say, okay. And now it has created an album out of all those faces. And that's what's going up on my TV set. So you
pets.
Could... Say again?
Pets.
You can do pets? Yeah. I think your pets would have to... Gosh, that you know, that's a great question. I'm going to put that down here. Can you do pets? Because I swear to God I read something about pets. But now that I say that, I don't remember what was involved in it. Pets... on Google Chrome cast photos because somewhere there is a pets option in these AIs for photos, and I don't remember where I read it. You said it and I immediately had this flash on it. It's either Google Photos or it's Microsoft Photos or it's Apple Photos, but one of these is also including pets as part of the AI.
But why do I have to use my photos through Google? Why is that? Something?
Because it's a Chromecast.
Okay, but
that's
there's
it.
No way around that.
There's no way around that. Just like I started talking about the Amazon Stick has its photo,
right.
You have to give your photos to Amazon to get them
so
on
I'm
your
giving
TV.
My photos to Google.
Yeah,
I do that.
Yeah, and actually, I mean to be fair, we've talked a bit about Google Photos in the past. I think it's an awesome. Backup option. There is always with Google, any Google service, you have this privacy ethical thing, this dilemma that you have to deal with in your soul, whether this is things that you're supporting or not. But most of these features don't work well unless you've given up this bit of privacy. And if you're using the Chromecast, I can tell you how to use it for photos without giving up your privacy, Bob. You just sign up a new Google account, and only the photos that you want on your Chromecast go into that account. And that's the only Google account you're using.
Is this any different than Airport, the app?
Yes. I think what you're referring to is the AirPlay function from the Apple devices. If you were to have an Apple TV... and you're using an Apple phone, then you can have your Apple Pictures go over to the Apple TV.
Okay, that's Apple only.
That's Apple only and all that aspect. Okay. Now you don't, if you were to buy a new TV, there's a good chance Apple TV comes with it. I don't know if Photos can go over to that TV using that Apple app.
Okay.
If I was Apple, I wouldn't allow it. If I was any other company but Apple doing the same thing, I would totally allow it. But the way Apple does things, I'm certain that they wouldn't allow it. It would be, but it's really surprising that they have an app on other, like they've licensed their app now with Samsung TVs, Vizio TVs. These new TVs coming out are going to do Apple TV.
Yeah.
So they're doing some different stuff. So maybe, but I would doubt it. But what you could do with the Chromecast, if your goal the Chromecast is cumbersome. You don't have a remote control. That's why I like the Fire Stick. I can hand the remote control to my wife or any guest in the house, and they can figure out what they're doing. With the Chromecast, the idea, and I've had this experience a couple of times with customers, you go into their Wi-Fi network, and you are invited to cast to their Chromecast. And that's really what's going on, is you have a display in your home that your smaller displays can use. So the idea is everything you're doing is happening from your phone. You can watch a Netflix video on the Chromecast, but you start that procedure with Netflix on your phone. You don't have a remote control to go look into Netflix. You can project up onto this display a Chrome window. Whatever the web page is you happen to be looking at, you can project it up to the Chromecast. But the intention is you're doing it from your laptop, or you're doing it most likely from your phone, or maybe from a tablet. So it's cumbersome in that regards. It's not. But if you're going to do it for a slideshow on your TV, I've immediately started using it for slideshows. Because Google Photos is so effective as a backup solution. I use Google Photos on my phone. My phone is my main camera. And I don't want to lose any of those photos. So I allow Google Photos to suck up all those copies of all those photos from my phone into their services. Well, they're immediately available to me on the Chromecast. So I stick the Chromecast in the display that's in our bedroom, because that's one of my workstations. I've got a computer there. And I've got a button that switches it over to HDMI 2. And now HDMI 2 is just photos of the kids and family. And when I want to use that display, I switch over to HDMI 1, and now I'm ready to use the display. And that's how I've gone forward, as it's my digital picture frame.
So is Chromecast really passe, and Fire Stick is really taking it over?
Not necessarily. It's more the mindset behind them. I think the Fire Stick makes a lot of sense to, like I said, for the folks that want a remote control. But my kids will hop on a Chromecast without even thinking. They started sending stuff to our big screen the moment they got into the net. When we bought a big screen TV and it was part of the network, they immediately started throwing YouTube videos up there and photos up there. They didn't even look for a remote control. They didn't even try and find a remote control.
So how did they do that?
Well, you know,
how did they
they're Zoomers. They're Zen G kids.
They're digital natives. They're born with that knowledge.
How did they do that?
They just did it. They taught me how to do it.
Because you're a digital immigrant.
Whenever you find on your phone, it goes on the TV. Copies the image.
Yeah, but in the case of the Chromecast, the apps that you use that support it will have a little icon pop up that says that it's supported by the Chromecast. Yeah. And if you wanted to get any web page up to the Chromecast, then you would have to do it in the Chrome browser. And now, you know, what's interesting is that many of you are using Chrome, I know this. But some of you are using Firefox, or maybe using Opera, or they're using Edge that comes with Windows 10. All of these are, or soon to be, all based on the same engine as Chrome. And so they work with the Chromecast. Firefox is the exception, the holdout. They've got their own their own engine. But I believe there's a Chromecast plugin for Firefox. So you can use Firefox to display to a Chromecast. I think the real decision maker here is the convenience factor of, is this what's controlling your big screen experience, or is this what's controlling your big screen experience? And I look around the table, and I think most of us, me included, would rather have this the experience on a big screen. I don't want to have to pull out my phone and fumble with some app I don't use very often. But my kids, they don't care. They use this for everything. And so adding a big screen experience to it is just a button away.
You say that Chrome takes our images and puts it in the cloud.
No, Google Photos does that.
Google Photos. Does that mean we lose any kind of protection on the use of those photos?
No.
Copyright protection.
No, as far as I understand at the moment, your photos will be used for things like facial recognition, like for training facial recognition algorithms. Well, who knows where that technology will end up. It also, I mean, one of the things they, I mean, it is in the cloud. Because it's in the cloud, law enforcement can get warrants to search it. I mean, the warrantless searching has stopped, or supposedly has stopped. So they can't go fishing. Ideally, they have to have a reason, and they have to give Google a warrant. And Google has a position where they typically, or at least their front-facing position, is they fight warrants. That it has to be a reasonable warrant. But at the point of a warrant, it's Google determining whether it's reasonable or not. If Google looks at the warrant and says, oh, that's reasonable, then they'll give access to that information. So it's subject in that manner. But they're not selling your pictures. They're not using your pictures for advertising. Okay. They're not putting your pictures on Google promotions. I mean, as far as I understand, that none of that kind of stuff is going on. You haven't given them that kind of permission. And the Google backup scenario for photos, it's unlimited at a lower quality photo. So you take your photos at whatever quality you do. Google allows you to keep them in Google Photos for free at a lower resolution. I argue that that's a great thing to do because it's free, because it's unlimited and free, and most photos you take, the quality doesn't matter. Most of the things that, I mean, most of them are like, here's the kids at the beach, here's a selfie of me with my wife.
It's more pixels than you need.
Right. Most of the things you're doing already have more, that's a great way to put it. You've already got more pixels than you need for the experience you're trying to get from it. You're not trying to blow these up as paintings to hang on your wall in your house.
Oh, yeah?
But if you are...
Yes.
Then if that's what matters to you, then you should already be investing in a better backup solution. You should already be paying a subscription fee, because you can do that with Google. You can buy a subscription fee to give you a certain amount, like a terabyte of space, and then you get the full quality of the photos. So if you're using this as professional media, then you should already be considering these other mechanisms of storage. The majority of people that I deal with are just you and me. They're people that are taking photos on the cuff. 90% of their photos don't matter. They would hate to lose any of them, but the quality of the photo is not affecting their experience. And so install Google Photos and allow it to back up, because if your phone gets stolen and you don't have a backup solution, you've lost all those photos.
So with a 60 or 65 inch TV, you don't need good photos?
Let me say that at a 60-inch TV, which is what we've got in our house, mm-hmm. you are not going to notice the difference.
Really?
That's how far away you are from the TV also.
Well, it's also an indicator of how high a quality what's stored for free is. I mean, it's a good indication of how many extra pixels we really do have on these devices.
You know, I thought it was really silly for people to watch movies on their cell phone, you know. And then I realized that if you take that cell phone and hold it up against your TV at home, it's the same size image.
Yeah. Yeah. I got out of the habit of keeping a screen right here to watch large, like to have the full screen movie experience until I got reading glasses again. And. So now I can have the screen right here, and it's like I'm in an auditorium.
Yeah. So have you seen those things that are like they play harmonica with? They go around your shoulders. And they hold
that's what you need, right?
Yeah.
The kids have these Xbox game controllers that are now compatible with their phones as well. So they get them for the big screen to play games, but they've got these, like you were talking about, for a mount. So they mount the phone right on top of the game controller, and they can play the game.
So do they have
The VR stuff? TV? Not yet. Yeah, my kids don't. Not yet. We did get one of those goofy, cheap ones where you put the phone in it.
Oh,
we got one of those.
Did you try it out?
Oh, yeah, I've tried it out a couple. It's all right. I mean, it makes you a little nauseous if you move too fast with it, but I mean, it's an all right experience. It's definitely worth the price. If you already own a phone that will do that kind of stuff, then the headsets are like $20. I mean, it's basically an enclosure. Yeah, yeah.
Okay, now, I use this to take some pictures. So I have those pictures in here. But now I got a new computer and I've loaded pictures onto the computer. They're on my phone too. How is that working?
Say that again. You take pictures.
I took pictures and put them on my new computer, but they're now on my phone, and I did not install them on the phone.
Well, you might find they're not residing on the phone, but you have access to them on the phone.
Is it because it's in that
Google Photos?
The Google folders?
Yeah. Yeah, I would imagine that's what's going on. Where do you store your photos on your computer?
Normally, I put them in the pictures folder.
Okay. Are you running the Google backup sync?
There's so many things. iCloud or something like that and something box. And there's all these other folders that they could also be going into.
So without knowing, I could only imagine what's happened is you've put them in your computer in a standard location. You're running some app that puts them out in the cloud.
Yeah.
So that then you can have access to them on your portable device.
Yeah.
And many times those kinds of photos aren't residing on your... I mean, the only thing that's residing on your device is a little thumbnail to the photo.
Yeah.
Well, this is a great example of how I will talk until we're done talking and people have to go. Either to their own thing or just to the bathroom. People have to go.
It's sometimes you lose people, too.
Yeah? Is everybody lost?
So you're telling me this was a bad investment?
No, not at all.
Not at all.
I think it'll work for you. If you're concerned about the privacy issues of storing your photos at Google, then or basically you have to have a Google account, right? But what you could do is you could get a Google account specifically for that device. It's the only account you use with that device. You do have it loaded up on your phone. And then put only the photos that you want that device to pop up in that account specifically.
Okay.
Yeah. Go ahead.
Okay, this is kind of a performance question of startup. Do you know if my startup thing basically program really goes through what it does? And you know, I have checked in Windows, like only 3 things officially start up. But of course, Microsoft starts up under the covers like 100.
Yeah.
You know, and many of those things I think are not needed by me.
Are you using Windows 10? I don't remember.
Windows 10.
Okay. Hey, you found the task list, right?
It's more a startup program manager that displays how long it takes to start each specific thing that they're starting.
Oh, this is a recommendation you have?
It's not even. It's a recommendation program. And I'm thinking, okay, is it true of all the things that are listed in services? Automatic, I think, starts them up at the beginning. No. What is it? One way starts them up, and the other one, manual start, says that they're started only when needed.
Yes. Yeah, that's manual. You're talking about in the services. Yeah, in Windows mm-hmm. services.
So I'm thinking, why not switch everything to manual? Because so many of these things that I never use would then never start.
Black Viper. Are you familiar with Black Viper?
No.
Black, in fact, while we're here, let me look it up real quick to make sure it's still a thing. We used to use this all the time to tweak performance out of Windows computers. Black Viper was a site where they kept a track. Oh, what is it? Black Viper.
That doesn't look like it.
Services, Windows 10. There we go. It's blackviper.com. I could have just put that. So these guys, for years, have kept lists of Windows services Here, this is what you look at. There's a table of services. And this would go down in alphabetical order, that list of services that you find in Windows. And it gives you, like I'm in the Windows 10 version, so it shows you how it would be set by default, how it would be set by default for home, for pro, and then it gives you, is it safe for a desktop, safe for a laptop, and tweaked is their own, whether it's safe or not, these are the things we've been screwing around with. And so you can go through this list, and you can go through your services list, and you can take their comments and decide whether you want to you want to turn something off, you want to change the status of that service, you want to switch from auto to manual.
It will impact some program won't work, right?
That's right. And they'll make comments about that. They'll say, this is the way it ships out of the box. This is it's safe to turn it off. Or you should keep this in manual mode. I'm paraphrasing what they've done in column form. Like it's, right. You can see it's like a spreadsheet up there. And so they'll have little comments next to it. But what they're essentially saying is this is safe to turn off. Or you must leave this on. Or if you wanted the out-of-box experience for Windows Pro, all these things need to be on.
Okay.
So Black Viper...
Yeah.
And I'll add that to the list of things that I post on our website. Because it's very helpful when you're trying to sort. And it's funny, it's something that's been kind of forgotten about because so much power is now available in oh boy, I did that wrong. Black Viper.
Well, the only spot I see the need is because of, the boot up time, it's starting so many.
Well, and I used to use an app, I cannot remember the name of it, that would put a shim in at startup and then calculate the startup time of each.
Well, that's what this one I saw was. I think it's some sort of startup manager. I can't remember the exact
name. Do you remember the name of it?
Not exactly. It's like startup manager, maybe.
Okay. Yeah, I don't remember what.
But they're all worried about that same.
Are these issues that relate to the Apple at all?
No. No, the Black Viper thing is purely Windows stuff. Yeah, the Apple and Macintosh stuff, they really don't let you know what's going on. You can go and look, but you really don't have a lot of control over it. They have very specific applications that can start up when the computer starts up, but as far as the Apple services stuff goes, And what we mean by services is the language that is used by Windows. And these are aspects of the computer that do things like determine when the computer goes to sleep, determines how the camera works, determines if the sound system, if you can raise and lower the volume buttons. Determines when updates get downloaded or if they get downloaded, things of that nature. And you find most of your controls over that kind of stuff in the system preferences on a Macintosh computer. And it's not all of them. It's just the ones that you have control over. Windows, notoriously, since the very beginning, has allowed you a lot of control over that kind of stuff to the point where you can break your experience. And Apple has always started from the other side of things, where we know exactly how this computer should work, and they do. They absolutely do, because they build the computer. So when they turn on and off services, which you cannot do, they do it because their software looks at the profile of your computer. They see this is a motherboard from 2017. It's got this processor on it. It's got this sound system on it. They know all that because they built the computer. And they tailor your experience around the hardware that it's installed in. And so an Apple user should not be finding themselves trying to tweak performance out of it, even though it still goes on. That's not the Apple approach to things. And so there isn't a system like services to go and enable and disable things that are running in the computer. Do you have something to add to that?
Well, one of the things I found was that I tried some apps. I said, nah, this really doesn't work where I want to. I got rid of the app. It's still in startup time modes.
Yeah.
You know, so even though you've done everything you can to get rid of something you tried, it's still running.
Now, one of the things you can do with Windows 10 in those circumstances is you can go to the Windows, the Start menu, and you can type in the name and see what instances of that pop up. You might find that there's something there that you can remove. You can, the Task Manager.
Yeah.
If you haven't explored the Task Manager, you use it all the time. So you see the list of startups. Okay, so in startups, you can see all the things that's set to start up,
yeah.
And from the Task Manager, I'll bring it up here on the screen.
Well, this app I found actually shows you, I think, more than what Task Manager. And part of it is it's probably easier to read.
Well, what's beautiful about this is people with very little experience can
yes.
go into the Task Manager, look at what's starting up, and they can make a determination what and enable and disable these items from
well,
startup.
I mean, I've disabled it, but yet it shows up taking time going through the startup routine. Because it's basically
there's
checking,
still something in there.
Okay, it's disabled, and so I'm checking, you know, I'm going through my list because it's still in the list. Oh, I really don't have to execute it after all.
Yeah.
They're going through the check to see it, that it's
so it sees it as needing to be, but you don't see it as disabled here? Or you see it as disabled in the Task Manager list?
I see it disabled in Task Manager, but I see it still executing code.
That's odd.
Yes.
Yeah.
That's what I thought, too.
But still, it's Windows, and you, I know, have a lot of Windows experience going back generations of Windows.
Not as much Windows experience. That's the problem. It's other computer experience.
You know from your previous Windows experience that, and you started out this conversation about how there's dozens of places that Windows starts up applications.
Yes.
And so Windows 10 has become the best at corralling all these into, and still they're out there.
They're much better in that regard.
You noticed in the same thing, you've got a list of services here, and you can't do anything with the services from the Task Manager. You have to go into Windows administration stuff to start turning off and on services like you were talking about. But at least they're corralled under the same area so that you can be exploring those as well. And again, Apple doesn't have... What Apple has for startup is if you look in your login, under System Preferences, under your users, you can go into Login Items under your user account, and it'll list the things that you're telling your computer to start up when you start up the computer. And that's the most control you have. And typically there's one or two things in there. And occasionally something's gotten left behind. Like maybe you installed Dropbox and you uninstalled Dropbox. But because Dropbox requires to be running to work, it'll put a shim in there to say start up Dropbox when the computer starts up. And then you end up with a little icon up here in the menu bar. Well, even if you uninstall Dropbox, it may leave that shim in the startup items. Antiviruses are a good one to do that too. If you installed an antivirus in your Macintosh and you uninstall it, it may still have left the menu icon. You might even still see the menu icon in the bar up on the right, but you know that program's not installed. You know you got rid of it, and and you know you're not running it, but still got the icon. There's a good chance that shim is in the startup items.
And to get rid of the shim?
You go into the startup items, and from there you can remove it. It's a little minus sign. It'll take it out of there.
Well, another one that comes to mind is, you know how Windows really works as far as how it prioritizes the CPU? Is it purely interrupt, and if it comes to a faster, higher priority interrupt, it stop quits? Or does it kind of timeshare? Okay, this one runs so many milliseconds before it goes to the next, or is it let that task go to the end?
Man, I'd be very careful messing around with that stuff.
Well, but that determines how you make changes that help your performance.
Yes, and I agree, and there are cases to get into that.
You had the overall.
But I would not generally. I have definitely had experiences where I was playing with that, and just the computer blew up right in front of me. When I changed the priority of the CPU, all of a sudden I had a blue screen. And then I was dealing with a situation where it would start up in blue screen, and I had to go into a safe mode to switch it back.
Yeah, for the benefit of others, basically the computer I have the most experience is, is one that's extremely slow trying to get new things going because it was doing so much security checking and things that made it run very solidly and never fail. PCs, on the other hand, seem to be oriented just the opposite. They could care less about kind of the security implications. They just want to get it running.
Yeah, that's definitely the foundation of Windows, is just make it work first.
Likewise, business computers instantly back up everything somehow. They write it to disk so it's saved. Mm-hmm. PCs tend to say, oh, when we're done with this thing, we'll write that whole block of data out at once. Now, that's not good enough, so they...
Well, and really you're talking about the difference in the foundations of operating, so not necessarily business computers, but
yes.
like an example of that would be like Linux or Unix specifically doesn't write anything,
yes.
Even though they're used in big corporate environments and they're used in scientific endeavors, their whole foundation is diskless to begin with, and disk is secondary. Everything gets written and run in memory. And so if you pull the plug, there's a lot of work that can just all of a sudden disappear from a Linux or a Unix computer.
That's why you need a backup.
And actually the Apple computer, the Macintosh computer operating systems are fundamentally the same thing. It's based on a Linux distribution, and everything that's happening in an Apple computer is sitting out there in memory. Apple uses a hard drive format called a journaling system. And what it does is every time you make a change, it makes a tick in the operating system so that you have this ongoing ledger of every change that's happened, every app that's opened up, every keystroke that you've done, so that if you lose power, the computer goes back to that ledger and starts rebuilding everything back to where you were before you lost power. So many times if you kill the power on an Apple computer, you can hit the power button and you'll watch it just all come back. Every app will start right back up right where you were, will come right back in front of you. Yeah. And with I would guess an 85% to 95% accuracy. I know that I run a virtual machine on my Macintosh, and that never starts back up right where it was. Everything else around it, my email, my web pages, everything comes right back up to where it was. But my VirtualBox machine doesn't come back on. I have to do all that manually at a power loss. But yeah, and actually the Windows 10, I don't know if you've noticed, is doing some of that now too. Mm-hmm. You can leave Windows open, web pages open, and apps open, and restart your computer. And many of those will come right back to where it was when you restarted the computer. It's been fascinating to watch because Windows users have wanted it since the very beginning, and it's finally happening.
Well, you want something long enough. Anyway, thanks, Scott.
You're welcome. We're down to the last four and myself. How can I help you guys? What kind of question do you have?
A real quick question. Go ahead, sir.
Go ahead.
Flipping back to TV and Fire Stick. And this is for U.S. TV. We're only here for 30 days in Mexico, so
okay.
The concern is more in the U.S. Our TV used to be Comcast.
Comcast.
And we got it cable. Yeah. And we got it, and it was on a promotional, and it was really good. After a year or so, then it ran out, and the price skyrocketed. We called Comcast, and they didn't even want to hear it. It's like, take it or leave it. And we told them, well, now we're retired. We can't afford it. We went to DirecTV. Same thing happened. So we were hearing about Roku, and I said, well, yeah, you can get it, but you got to pay all these subscription services. And then one of her friends told her about Fire Stick. You get this Fire Stick, you plug it in, you get everything free, and it's just great. So I called my son. He's one of the electronic natives, and he said, yes and no.
Right.
He said, you get a Fire Stick. If you just plug it in, you're not going to get everything. You got to program it somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
I said, oh, great. Well, you can help me program. He said, well, not so fast.
He said, yes and no.
If you do that, it's illegal. And he said, I would recommend that you just, I want to get CNN and Fox News. He said, just pay the fee every month for what you want.
Yeah.
And you get the Fire Stick, but whatever it won't give you, don't monkey around with trying to do some illegal programming on it. Just pay the fee. It's not that much. But we don't want to pay the fee.
Well, you guys,
we don't want to go to jail either.
You guys have come to the right club because we debate about this kind of stuff all the time. Just offhand, the legality is not the concern, with the exception of if you're running on an internet provider that's tracking that kind of stuff. And it's not the majority position, but there are some internet providers out there that are paying attention to where your traffic comes and goes. And if it sees it as being illicit traffic, then they've been known to send a letter saying, this is your first warning, you've got 3 warnings, if you get caught doing this again, and there's...
Cutting off your internet service?
Yeah, that's right.
We'll call the FCC and send the...
No, they're not, nobody...
FCC SWAT team.
Nobody, it's all cover your ass stuff.
Yeah.
It's they're not going to send law enforcement after you. There isn't law enforcement that would come after you for this kind of stuff. It doesn't exist. We don't pursue that. It's all, these are commercial endeavors that pursue that stuff. Civil court cases, and there's only been one to date. I think there's only been one case that was won. Does that sound right?
Sounds right. Very low.
Yeah.
Don't forget you're talking the legalities across borders.
Again, well, he's talking about in the United States, though. In the United States, not in Mexico. He's talking strictly in the United States.
Within 30 days, I can take or leave anything in Mexico for 30 days. But back in the States, that's
back in the States. So there isn't a criminal aspect that you're concerned about when using these illicit programs. You're not facing jail time. You're not facing paying fines to the government for something. That's never happened. The only thing that has happened is civil cases of companies suing people.
Well, which shows are you trying to find? Yeah.
Well,
Fox News.
May say, well, right now we have an antenna. It just scoops whatever's out in the... I would like to get Fox News and CNN. I get the right side, I get the left side, and the truth is somewhere in the middle. Right, but according to Fire Stick, what my son said, Fire Stick, just get it out of the box and plug it in. It's going to give me those. I have to subscribe to them. And he said, it's not that much. He said, my recommendation is that way you don't have to pay for a lot of
and
stuff.
This
you
is
don't
in
use
the
it.
US,
just
in
pay
the
for
US,
you
yeah.
want. And you say, it's $10 a month or $5, whatever it is, just pay it. And
one
be done
thing,
with it. That's what
about,
his recommendation.
Think about using lowcast.org. No. Lowcast.tv, maybe. It is illegal to take the broadcast that comes across the air, pick it up with an antenna, and rebroadcast it unless you are a Lowcast is a nonprofit.
Lowcast.
So is Lowcast?
So Lowcast, I have 12 different Denver channels because it thinks I'm in Denver. Now Lowcast is only available in like 18 cities.
Okay, we're in the Portland, Oregon area.
Iffy. You know, you go to Lowcast. I think it's Lowcast.tv, and if you're not...
Is it? Oh, it's L-O-Cast. L-O-Cast.
L-O-C-A-S-T. It is.
Watch your local... Oh, because it's for local broadcast TV for free.
It rebroadcasts your local stuff.
There's one in Seattle.
Okay. You have to be in the Seattle area.
Yeah, we
you can't
put them.
And you use a VPN to make you appear as though you're back home?
Yes.
And so then it allows you to use
so
it for your Denver channels.
ABC, CBS, NBC, PBS.
We get most
of
those channels with antennas.
Yeah. All those.
See, we don't down here, and so it's one of the things that people are concerned
like
with here.
Channels just three,
so
it pulls it out of the air.
So let me put a sign off, but I got a little bit more information for you. It's just I got to shut this down.
Sure, go ahead.
Thank you guys for joining us today. Our regular time. 9:15 to 10:15 here at Tequila's every Tuesday. Join the San Carlos Computer Club. If you've enjoyed this, then check out our website at sccclub.org where I post recordings of all these meetings. We also post on YouTube. We have a YouTube channel. Check out our Twitter at sccclub.org. You can find all that from our website. My name is Scott Stimson again from International Computer Solutions. If you're anywhere on the internet needing computer information and help, I would appreciate you getting a hold of me, scott@internationalcs.net, or you can call our offices. Locally, it's 226-0209. If you're abroad, country code 52, area code 622, phone number 226-0209. Until next week. tech on. Save that. Turn that off.
So you don't type it. It's a voice thing. You record your message and send it out rather than...